Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
What about the alt-left that came charging at the, as you say, the alt-right?
We were too cautious. We were too namby-pamby.
Let me be very clear. I did not collude with Russia.
John Conyers is an icon in our country.
But I think the losers are Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer.
Our press secretary gave alternative facts to that. But the point remains.
Wait a minute. Alternative facts?
Those are the sounds coming out of D.C. today. It's divided and polarized. If you follow the daily news, it's easy to think that little in this country works anymore, that we're losing our capacity to solve big problems. But we're here to tell you otherwise. I'm Deval Patrick, former governor of Massachusetts.
And I'm Jennifer Granholm, former governor of Michigan. So this is a podcast where we're going to visit places across the country where cool things are actually happening and working. It's a podcast that's going to give people hope, we hope, and to let you know what's actually working in the laboratories of democracy. Forget D.C. We're going to meet the people across the country who are getting things done.
Because in these days of dark and divided politics, we think it's worth reminding ourselves that in lots of places, America works. Today, we're focusing on one really impressive example in Colorado. Unplanned pregnancies account for nearly half of all pregnancies in America. Half. Imagine that. This cuts across class, region, race, and ethnicity. Unplanned pregnancies contribute to higher dropout rates, greater demands on the healthcare system, and thus higher costs, profound limits on the ability of many women to enter or stay in the workplace. So let's take you to a program in Colorado that works.
So I'm just going to move the table up a little bit.
It's like the worst spot to get pinched to is like right there.
Sensitive. So. Go ahead and lay back. I'm going to pull this out for your feet.
So, Deval, we're hearing Peyton Szabo, and she's talking with a nurse named Megan Blanchard, and they are in your typical sterile exam room at Children's Hospital Colorado in Aurora, which is a city right next to Denver. So Peyton is 19 years old, and she's lying on top of one of those stiff paper sheets on a medical exam table. She's got dark maroon lipstick on. She's wearing a sleeveless gray dress, and that dress shows more than just a few tattoos.
Well, this one I got done in a kitchen. This one was from a tattoo machine that I decided to buy off Amazon, as are the ones on my legs. I only have one professional tattoo, and it's the bat on my chest.
I guess even though Peyton is no stranger to tattoo needles, she was pretty nervous about today's procedure.
I guess tattooing needles and, like, shot needles are different somehow. Not really, but, like...
All right, so take a deep breath in. Blow it out. You're just going to feel a little pinch. Keep on breathing.
Ow.
Peyton is at the hospital today to get this little plastic rod about the size of a toothpick, implanted just under the skin in her upper arm. It's a form of birth control, and it's called Nexplanon. And that little rod, it releases hormones that suppress ovulation. And by the way, it lasts for up to 3 years.
And I understand, Jennifer, it can be easily removed anytime.
Right, if she chooses to have it removed.
Right.
All right, you have your Nexplanon. It's just under your skin right there.
Weird. It just feels like a little, I don't know, like a really large splinter. It's kind of a giant weight off my shoulders. I don't have to worry about getting pregnant. I don't have to worry about taking a pill every day. I don't have to stress over, like, if I got my period or not, you know?
So Peyton knows that stress very well because she was on the pill for a while in high school, but she stopped taking it after she gained about 60 pounds. And then a year ago, she noticed that she hadn't gotten her period for a couple of months.
They had always been irregular, so I was like, it's no big deal. And people were just like pushing me to take a pregnancy test. I took two of them, and it was rough. It was really hard.
Here was Peyton, 18 years old and pregnant. Her mom had recently been evicted. So she was living with her longtime boyfriend and his mom at the time.
And for a while, we were considering abortion, but we just knew that our hearts weren't in the right place for that, that we couldn't handle that. So we decided on adoption, and it all worked out great. It was really hard being pregnant and trying to graduate high school, and I worked full-time up until a week before I was delivering. You know, it was totally worth it. I mean, I have a beautiful daughter out of this.
So she did give the baby up for adoption, but still, Peyton never wants to face an unplanned pregnancy again. It was really hard, sure. And it disrupted her life, as you can imagine. And today, she says that for the first time, she feels protected.
How much did this implant cost, Jennifer?
They are expensive. They're more than $800.
And how'd she pay for it?
Well, she doesn't have insurance. But she was able to get birth control completely free, thanks to the Colorado Family Planning Initiative, which is a program that started in 2009.
We really, really wanted to level the playing field in Colorado so that every single woman had access to every single device, and so that there wasn't any division or inequity, regardless of who you are, where you lived, or any of the circumstances that brought you here.
That's Nurse Liz Romer, and she heads the Family Planning Center at Children's Hospital Colorado. And the birth control devices she's talking about are really the centerpiece of this program. There's two of them. There's the hormonal implants, like the one in Peyton's arm, and then there are IUDs, which are those little tiny T-shaped things that go inside of a woman's uterus. And doctors call both of those methods long-acting reversible contraceptives, or LARC. And studies show that those devices are 20 times more effective than the pill.
20 times?
Yep.
But again, they're expensive. So how did Colorado get IUDs and implants to more women?
Private money. That's how. $27 million worth of private money.
This grant from the Anonymous Foundation was intended to be a 5-year grant that then went out to community family planning clinics to make LARC available at no cost for young women who did not have insurance.
Meet Dr. Larry Wolk, head of Colorado's State Health Department. And the Anonymous Foundation he's talking about is the Susan T. Buffett Foundation. Susan, you may recall, Jennifer, was the late wife of Warren Buffett.
Yep.
Her organization gives money almost exclusively to fund access to birth control. But you know how controversial that can be, so they like to stay out of the news.
Prior to that time, you know, we maybe put in less than 5 IUDs a year. And now consistently, we're inserting over 1,000 devices a year.
So we're told, Jennifer, that before this grant, clinics just couldn't afford to keep these devices in stock. They're more modern and updated devices, and many of the doctors and nurses weren't familiar with how to insert them. And then Colorado needed to invest in a lot of outreach to make it work.
It's not your mother's IUD. You know, there's a lot of misnomers and misconceptions. And so we developed a program whereby, you know, young women could educate each other about LARC and how it can and is the most effective form for most of these women who are living in transition. Because, you know, once you receive this, it's safe and it's effective for, in some cases, up to 10 years.
So this is what happens when you invest $27 million in birth control. First, a huge drop, 54%, in unplanned teen pregnancies.
Wow.
Plus, fewer abortions, a lot fewer. The state abortion rate for teens in Colorado, as a result of this program, went down, hold on, 64%.
Hmm.
Now, we know the numbers have been going down across the country over the last few decades, but 64%? Nowhere close to what Colorado's has dropped.
And it's also meant big financial savings for the state. You know, young moms often rely on state programs like Medicaid or other welfare programs. And Larry Wolk, back at the State Health Department in Colorado, says fewer teen pregnancies saved welfare programs nearly $70 million.
That is a lot of money.
And that's not even counting the education and productivity losses that were avoided.
It's not just a win-win. It's a win-win-win-win-win because we have positive health outcomes, positive financial outcomes, positive social outcomes. There isn't a single negative that I can think of as it relates to this program.
I understand it even appealed to Colorado conservatives like State Senator Don Corum.
I'm a self-proclaimed redneck Republican. If you don't like abortions, why don't we just prevent the pregnancy? So that seems to be common sense to me.
But the Buffett grant was set to run out in 2016. Health officials had to now turn to the state legislature for money. They didn't know what was going to happen.
Yep. Senator Corum, that self-proclaimed redneck, co-sponsors the bill to fund contraception. And Dr. Larry Wolk even wears an IUD as a lapel pin to the hearing.
Wow.
And it was great because people would say, like, what is that little thing there on your lapel pin? I said, it's an IUD. You know, and they're like, really? It's so small. And, you know, and I said, yeah, and it's light. And I would hand it to them and show them, you know, kind of what we were talking about.
Then in the spring of 2015, the bill comes up for a vote.
Ms. Jackson, please call the roll.
Senator Hill.
No.
Senator Jones.
Yes.
Senator Ulberry.
Aye.
Senator
Sonnenberg. No.
Mr. Chair.
No, that failed 3-2.
In spite of bipartisan support, it failed.
It was awful. We were really frustrated.
It was strictly politics. Some of the members of the committee could not get their head wrapped around that this is not an abortion.
And some people are still not convinced, like State Representative Kevin Lundberg.
The IUD is something that not only can prevent a pregnancy from occurring, but can terminate a pregnancy that has begun. That's concerning to me.
So let me just bust in here for a sec, a little biology lesson.
Bust in.
There's a few different ways that these IUDs work. I mean, mostly they stop the sperm from meeting the egg and therefore no fertilization and no pregnancy. But if on the extremely rare and theoretical chance that sperm breaks through and merges with an egg, some IUDs can prevent the fertilized egg from implanting in the uterus wall. And according to the medical field, that implantation, that's the beginning of a pregnancy.
But that's in medicine, not necessarily in politics. Here's Kevin Lundberg again.
And the real question ought to be, what's the highest value and principle that we're looking at here? If it is to protect the intrinsic value of life, then I believe we should always err on the side of protecting the life and understanding that the life begins at that first point, not 4 or 5 days later at the point of implantation.
Again, scientists say that everything Representative Lundberg is concerned about is extremely rare, but it still remains a sticking point among some in the pro-life community. Of course, none of that is an issue with the implants like the one in Peyton's arm.
Could people get past the politics and consider the economic benefits for these young women in society?
Absolutely. Here's Republican Senator Corum.
If you want to end the cycle of poverty, this is the best tool that I can think of because what we found that teen mothers, their daughters are 22% more likely to be teen mothers themselves. And at age 30, only 1.5% have been able to get their degree. And I think all these young ladies just need that opportunity.
Okay, Jennifer, so how did Colorado keep this program going when that bill failed?
So Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper, who's a Democrat, he included $2.5 million for it in his state budget. And this time it was approved by both Republicans and Democrats. And then last year, they upped the funding to over $4 million, approved again by Democrats and Republicans.
Working together.
Preach it.
You know, sometimes you just have to look at the data and be objective. And as I said, this is a win-win for everyone. And, you know, being persistent with the messaging finally does sink in eventually.
Okay, Deval, so a happy ending for a program that works. A happy ending for Peyton. She just graduated from high school. She's planning on going to nursing school.
And that's what we're talking about. Programs that work. Next up, we hear from someone who wants to take Colorado's success national. So, Jennifer, we just heard about the amazing results of Colorado expanding access to long-acting birth control like IUDs and implants. It reduced unplanned pregnancy and abortion rates by over 50%. It sounds like great common sense policy to me, with great results.
Yep. And in most states, these devices are actually covered by either insurance or Medicaid. But accessing them is still a challenge. And so across the country, the number of women using either of these methods is really low. In fact, the most recent study in 2012 found only 12% of American women are using either IUDs or implants.
So let's talk to someone who's trying to change that. Mark Edwards is the co-founder of Upstream USA. It's an organization that provides training and support to health centers with the goal of expanding access to birth control nationwide. A lot of their work focuses on Delaware right now. That state has one of the highest rates of unplanned teen pregnancy. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Governor.
Glad you're here. So talk a little bit about how you conceived of, is that probably not the right word to use in these circumstances? Let me try something else. Talk a little bit about how you thought up the idea of Upstream USA and how you introduced the concept to states.
So before Upstream, I was working at another nonprofit that was focused on workforce development, working with young people.
Opportunity Nation.
Right. And spent several years just listening to young adults around the country to find out what their barriers were to success. And what struck me was how often their stories began with, well, I got my girlfriend pregnant and then I had to drop out of school. Mm-hmm. Or I found myself pregnant and I had to drop out of the workforce. And just unaided, we just kept hearing that over and over again, which sort of led me to think about sort of what is going on here. And it was then that I found out the extraordinary rates of unplanned pregnancy in this country. You know, nearly half of all pregnancies are unplanned pregnancies.
Wow.
But what's most striking is that most of these pregnancies occur to women who actually are using contraception. In other words, they know this is not a time they want to have a child.
So the contraception is failing.
Exactly.
The pill fails?
Well, if you are a perfect user, the pill is a very good method of birth control, but many women are not.
They skip a day, they stop.
Yeah. There are new methods of birth control, the new IUDs and implants, that are considered best-in-class contraceptive care for all women. These are the methods of birth control that OBGYNs use themselves for their own methods, by the way.
Okay.
So we heard about Colorado and how this wild, eye-popping drop in both unplanned pregnancy and abortion happened. So you guys are trying to take Colorado to scale. What's the holdup? Why isn't it obvious that this is what every state should be doing?
The results from Colorado were extraordinary. They really inspired my business partner and I to start Upstream. And the hard truth is that the barriers in states that stop them from getting those kinds of results are ones that really require a level of training and technical assistance in health centers so they can offer the kind of care that Colorado can now deliver. The typical experience that a woman has is that she goes to a health center to get birth control. And she's told, I can give you the pill right now. Here's the prescription. Go ahead. But if you want to get one of these more effective methods, it'll take you 3 or 4 visits. And these are unnecessary visits. It's mostly because of a set of systems barriers in these health centers. You know, for example, they don't stock the methods. Only some people are trained to place these methods. And so they say, if you can come back Tuesday between 9 and noon, then we can do it. But of course, they can't come back between Tuesday and 9 and noon.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of protocols that are in place that are not appropriate. So what they say is that when you can give women single visit access, that's when you see these numbers change. If you require women to take 3 or 4 visits, they don't end up leaving with these more effective methods.
Here you come. I'm Delaware. I'm sitting there minding my own business. And here comes this guy with an idea about how to bring better health outcomes to women in Delaware. Where do you even start that conversation?
Well, I think it starts, Governor, with the framing of this. When women have children before they plan for them or want them, there are a number of downstream outcomes which are really challenging. If you care about opportunity in this country, you've got to include pregnancy planning as part of it. This is not a women's issue. Again, I think the governor of Delaware, because we didn't approach it from that perspective, we didn't say we've got a women's issue here. We've got an issue which is about opportunity. He quickly saw how critical this could be to really helping Delaware families achieve their own goals.
And this is why this matters to all of us.
Oh, my God. I mentor this young woman who is 25 years old, and I've been mentoring her since she was 8 years old.
And when she was 19, she became pregnant. And she is her mother died of a drug overdose. Her father was not in the picture, so she was essentially orphaned. She cannot go back to school, which she wants to do. She works at a minimum wage job at the mm-hmm. sheriff's office. Mm-hmm. Her son has sickle cell anemia. She cannot afford daycare, and nor could she possibly afford to go back to school mm-hmm. because she has no time. And, I mean, she would never say it. But it is so much revolving around this unplanned pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. Helping women achieve their own goals of becoming pregnant only if and when they want to is one of the most powerful things we can do to expand opportunity and reduce intergenerational poverty.
Mm-hmm. Colorado used a significant private donation, which ended up working, and convinced the legislature to put public money in. Delaware got some private donation. Is private money necessary?
I think this is actually a great role for private philanthropy to be able to have these demonstration projects, to have them rigorously studied and evaluated in order to build the very significant case yeah. for government support. Yeah. So I think it would have been hard to do this exclusively in the confines of government.
There's one other thing that many conservatives would come back at the distribution of contraception on, which is that it catalyzes promiscuity among teenagers. Can you talk a little bit about that and whether studies bear that out?
So this has been studied. There's no evidence that that's the case. The distributing birth control somehow increases promiscuity. The thing to remember here, again, is that much of this unplanned pregnancy occurs to women who are actually already using contraception. So let's just start with that. But the method they're using is failing them.
But Jennifer, you and I have lived in a world where evidence alone doesn't or may not matter.
Science doesn't matter.
Well, you understand what I'm saying.
I totally get what you're saying.
It is a funny thing, but it's a serious problem.
It is.
And we think that common sense and good reason and a body of evidence would be enough to persuade policymakers to do the right thing. And it isn't always.
Right.
There are – you know, you do have people who say, I don't care what the evidence is. You know, pregnancy begins here, not where the medical
right.
community says
so much
or
of
what
that is faith-based too. I totally respect
absolutely.
And appreciate.
Absolutely.
Right?
And wherever it may come, right. wherever it may come, sometimes it's folks saying no because you said yes. That's politics
right.
too.
Right, of
right?
course.
So how do you get a great common sense idea to take hold in a place where people say, evidence, I just don't want to do this.
Yeah. By placing this issue into the context of broader conversations about economic opportunity and mobility, it gets attention in a way that if it was simply something over in the corner in the reproductive health area, it wouldn't.
Yeah.
So in the sort of this broader national conversation about economic opportunity and mobility, I think everyone is searching for solutions. And that's, I think it's across the aisle. People are looking for ways to do that. And I think that by placing it there, it has changed the conversation in a way, which I think has been more helpful.
Well, thanks for doing what you're doing.
Mark Edwards of Upstream USA, doing great work in Delaware and beyond. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Deval, first of all, I so love this idea of doing a podcast, particularly with you, because we served at a challenging time when
Indeed.
Governors were trying to be innovative, right? And so you remember every year in March, when the cherry blossoms are in bloom in Washington, D.C., all 50 governors are invited to come to what? To the National Governors Association. And when you and I were serving, we would go behind closed doors and we would listen to each other brag about their best successes, mm-hmm. where you've got some data behind it to
right.
show that it actually works. It was my favorite meeting.
It was amazing. I remember going to the first one. For me, and it was governors only, no staff in the room. It was totally trusting. I couldn't tell who in the room was a Democrat and who was a Republican. It was all about sharing what works, about worrying out loud with colleagues who understood the dimensions of the thing you were worrying about and shamelessly stealing each other's good
totally.
Ideas.
Totally. I would bring back like a binders full of policies
right.
to my staff who would freak out every time I came back from a National Governors Association meeting because it meant that there was all sorts of good ideas right. I wanted to implement in my state. And so this podcast is a way for us to deliver poachable great ideas of stuff that works
well,
out there across the country.
Yes, it is. And I think its parallel purpose is to remind ourselves as Americans that we are still able to confront big challenges with big and successful solutions.
And it's perhaps an antidote to what we are seeing of gridlock and partisanship and really despair out of what we're seeing in Washington, D.C.
Indeed.
So much is happening in cities and states across this country that give us hope.
And we can be better than what we see on the national stage. I think the other thing about today's episode that's particularly compelling to me, Jennifer, is it's an example of really successful public sector innovation.
Yes.
And innovation, I think, is enormously important in both the private and the public sector. I think the citizenry has a big appetite for innovation.
But you know that government is a lagging indicator because people are afraid to innovate.
Well, I think there are reasons for that, unfortunate reasons for that. But to have an atmosphere that encourages innovation, you have to raise your tolerance for failure.
Right.
And politics punishes failure. So one of the things I think you might take away from this example is that sometimes private sector money enables opportunities to try things and see whether they work. We need to encourage, to me, much, much more innovation in the public sector, just as we see in the private sector today.
Yep. I recall that great quote from the civil rights activist Fannie Lou Hamer that I am sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Amen.
And so bringing some positivity and some hope and shining a spotlight on things that are working, that's what this podcast is all about.
And who better than you?
And you. Thanks for listening to this show. I'm Jennifer Granholm.
And I'm Deval Patrick. This show is produced by WBUR in Boston with help from Iris Adler and Allie Ferguson.
And students from the Goldman School of Public Policy at UC Berkeley, particularly Elena Yarmosky.
Thanks for listening.